Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is October 14, 2018, and I'm talking over the phone from Texas with Randy Cates. Our topic today is the Gypsy band history and Randy's history prior to and after Gypsy. So, Randy, what is your full name and your date of birth?
Randall Cates. October 27, 1947.
Okay, and you grew up in the Fort Worth, Texas area. Is that correct?
No, I actually grew up in San Diego, California.
Oh,
the way I got to Fort Worth, Texas, is my dad worked for an aircraft manufacturing company in San Diego called General Dynamics. And he was later transferred to the General Dynamics in Fort Worth. I was a 16-year-old young man and not really wanting to move, but had to anyway. So that's how I got to Fort Worth, finished high school here, and then we went on the wild adventure of playing music.
Okay, let's start with 1969, and I understand you're playing bass guitar at the Cellar in Fort Worth.
Yeah, that's correct. Played there for 3 years. We started at 8 o'clock at night and played every other hour set till 4 o'clock in the morning on the weeknights, and we started at 9 o'clock and played every other hour till 6 o'clock in the morning on the weekends.
And what was the name of that band?
Well, that band had several names. The last one that settled was called Lucifer.
And I understand in the band was John Nitzinger, singer and songwriter, who would go on to play in Blood Rock of DOA fame from
He actually wrote a lot of Blood Rock songs, and I think he played some gigs with them, but he had his own career going at the time as well.
Okay. And had you started on bass guitar, is that correct?
No, I actually started out on guitar at age 13. Was playing in my dad's band called the Twilighters, and we would play around the San Diego area at different officers' clubs. There was a lot of military bases, and we played blues lodges and company parties and that kind of thing. If you ever heard of the Hotel Del Coronado, we played there several times, and it was just a big band, the sound of the older songs, the Benny Goodman stuff and the big band era stuff. And we sat down at these big music stands and read music, and our dress theme was a white sport coat and a pink carnation. And that was a song that I believe Marty Robbins made popular back in the early 50s.
Mm-hmm. So when did you switch to bass guitar?
Not till I came to Fort Worth.
Okay.
To Texas and going to high school, I couldn't find a band that needed a guitar player. So there was a high school band called Jack and the Rippers and this was probably 65, that needed a bass player, and they asked me if I could play Louie Louie, and of course I could, and so I auditioned, and that was the start of my playing bass.
Now, I understand while you were playing at the Cellar in Fort Worth that a band from Los Angeles came to play at the venue, and in the band was guitar player Tony Peluso, who would go on to be lead guitar player for the Carpenters. And what happened when you met up with Tony Peluso?
Well, again, we were at the Cellar, and we play an hour set, and they play an hour set. The band name originated from taking parts of everyone's last name, and that's how the name came up, and it was called Pesto Van Dandawag.
Pesto Van Dagawag.
Very good musicians. Became very good friends with them, and they said that I should move to California. There's a lot of bass player gigs out there, and so that's when I started thinking about moving out to California, or back out to California.
And when did you pack up and leave for California?
About mid-'69.
And where did you stay when you got out to Los Angeles?
Well, after driving out and pulling a trailer, a small trailer, I came in to L.A. and went directly to Sunset Boulevard and found an inexpensive motel near the corner of Highland and Sunset Boulevard.
And did you make contact with Tony Peluso out there?
Oh, it was like my first call.
And what did he advise you to do once you were there in town?
Well, once I found a place to live and move in, and I'd go to their band rehearsals, and we'd talk music, and we'd talk trying to find me a gig, and I got several names to call from Tony and the band guys, and there was also a place down on Sunset, I think it was called Wallach's Music City, which was about four blocks from where my apartment was, and I'd walk down there, and they had a bulletin board where different bands would put up a card that said we needed a bass player, guitar player, drummer, whatever. And from there, I made some calls and got a few gigs. And, started working around the area.
How did you get your job with the Blue Rose Band, the jam band that played Sundays at the Brass Ring in the Valley?
I was told about that. I can't remember who said that I might should go out there, but I'm sure it was one of the friends of the guys in the Pesto Van Dandawag. And finally went out there in the intent to set in with the band and see if I could establish myself out there.
That was on Sepulveda Boulevard, right?
Out in the valley, yeah.
And I believe you told me you were hired by Terry Furlong.
I was, yes.
And he was a lead guitar player with the Grassroots from 1969 through 1972.
And wrote several of their hits.
Right.
Too, while doing that.
Now, how often did the Blue Rose Band play?
We just played every Sunday at the Brass Ring.
And did that have people come up, local musicians come and just sit in with the band?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just like a jam like very much it is today.
All cover songs?
Most definitely, yeah.
And now their drummer, do you recall their drummer, the drummer for the Blue Rose Band when you first started?
You know, it's been so long since I've seen this gentleman, but I remember his name as being Chuck. Someone, I can't think of his name, and never have seen him since, but he later left the band to join Bonnie and Delaney and toured with them, I believe, for a year or so, but never have spoken to him since.
And then who took over his drum part?
Well, there was several drummers in and out, but one that I remember mostly was Dewey Martin, who played drums with the Buffalo Springfield. And then, of course, later, Bill Norton came in on Sundays and started until he was picked up by Gypsy.
So Bill Norton came to Los Angeles and was waiting for the job to open up with Gypsy. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And then did the road crew or the band members from Gypsy stop out at the brass ring and check in on him?
Oh, Timmy and Don Forte would come out occasionally, and some of their friends. But that's when I first became aware of a band called Gypsy.
You had never heard of Gypsy before?
No. No, not at all.
Was their first album even out at that time or not?
It may have been in the first stages of it.
Okay.
But when I first met the guys, I didn't know what album had been released.
Right. So Jay Epstein on the original album, drummer for the first album, was going to return to Minnesota, and Bill Norton was going to take over drums. Did you meet any of the guys from the band? Did they stop out at the brass ring?
Yes, later, but not right at first. It was just Timmy and Don coming in, and evidently that was a regular stop for them, just when they had off time.
Did you eventually meet Jim Johnson and Enrico and the others?
I eventually met Jim and Rico, none of the others.
They stopped out to see the Blue Rose Band.
Yes, I think probably Tim and John said there's a possible bass player you might want to listen to, and that's why they came.
Okay. And how long did you play with the Blue Rose Band?
Oh, probably 6 months or so before I started doing other things.
Okay. And then I understand you got a call from a friend in Texas, Jerry Lynn Williams. And,
correct.
And what was that call about?
Well, Jerry was living up in Northern California at the time and had called my mother and got my phone number out in L.A., and he was doing some showcasing of his songs, which he was quite a wonderful songwriter. So I drove up to, he was living in Los Gatos at the time, which is very just south of San Francisco, and said that he needed me to come up and back him in some of these dates that he had. So I drove up and started rehearsing for his showcases.
So how long did you stay up north then with Jerry Lynn Williams?
Oh, it was just maybe 2 or 3 weeks working up the songs. And we played a couple of gigs. Los Gatos is just up and over the mountains from Santa Cruz, and we played some dates in Santa Cruz and some smaller places up in Felton. And we worked some shows in Monterey around that area, and then eventually went to L.A. and showcased for we did a showcase for Capitol, and we also did a showcase for Columbia.
And I understand that you also, with this group, Lynn Williams, that you rehearsed at Studio Instrumental Rentals on Sunset and ran into Gypsy there.
Yeah, they had that was a big rental company. Any band that needed anything from drums, lighting, guitars, whatever, they would provide, and they had also a bunch of rehearsal studios for bands that were getting ready to go on the road, that they could rehearse their shows, and it was quite a cool place to hang.
Now, was that the first place then you met all of the Gypsy members?
Correct, yes.
And and that would have been Donnie Larson on bass and Jay Epstein still on drums, or had he left?
No. Bill had been with the band a short time at that time, and they were working on songs that were to go, I believe, on the In the Garden album.
Yeah, their second album.
Mm-hmm.
And Willie Weeks was there then too, correct?
No, Donnie was in the band. Willie hadn't come in yet.
Bill Lorden came in prior to Willie Weeks. Now, the Jerry Williams Band, what happened to that group?
Well, we eventually went back to Fort Worth and started playing back at the Cellar. We were joined by another guitar player. His name was Snuffy Walden.
Also from Fort Worth?
Yes. And also we had changed drummers to a very wonderful lady. Her name was Linda Waring, who played great drums and later was playing with Bugs Henderson after the time that we spent with her.
Now, are you back at the Cellar again?
Yes, and other little small clubs around Fort Worth, Dallas area.
And something happened where you wound up in Denver for a bit.
Yeah, we were supposed to go to Houston and play some dates with Jerry, and Snuffy was playing with us at the time, and he got sick, and he had what is it called when you turn yellow?
Jaundice?
Yeah, he had that, and so he could not play the rest of the dates with us, and we all decided to go back to L.A. because Jerry had been contacted by some other investors that wanted to see some of his tunes, and so we moved back to L.A.
Now, is this before Denver or after Denver?
This is before Denver.
Oh, before Denver. You go back. So you're back in L.A. What do you do in Los Angeles this time around? And you're still with the Jerry Lynn Williams band.
Yeah, still showcasing his tunes. And more or less, we were just living with Jerry at the time. And he was providing food and shelter and that kind of stuff. And Snuffy had in turn, when he couldn't go to L.A., he got much better, and he was offered a job with a group called Aphrodite, who lived in Denver.
Okay.
And so when I got set up with Jerry, because we weren't working much and we're making no money, Snuffy and I talked, and he asked me to come to Denver because the bass player have been interested in playing keyboards, and then they needed a bass player for Aphrodite, so I was up there for several months.
Okay, and before you went up there, when you were back in Los Angeles again, did you have any contact with Gypsy at that point?
I may have spoke to Timmy or Don, but nothing else.
Okay, and they told you that they might have a job as a opening for a bass player at some point, or was that later?
Well, that was when I was getting ready to move to Denver, and I spoke with Timmy, and they said that Willie wasn't going to stay with the band, that he would be going to play with Donny Hathaway, probably when the album was over, but no time frame was given. So I left and went to Denver.
And how long did you stay in Denver?
Maybe 3-4 months before the keyboard player changed his mind and wanted to play bass again. And I decided that I didn't want to stay in Denver, so I in turn moved back to L.A.
Okay, so now you're going back to L.A. again. Where did you wind up when you drove back to L.A.?
Well, of course, had no place to live or anything, so the first place that I went to was the Gypsy lived in a very large home in Laurel Canyon. And I just happened to go there first and to see what was going on there and see if they had ever gotten a new bass player or what was going on, and knocked on the door.
And who answered?
Timmy.
What did he say?
He looked at me and he said, "Good timing. We need a bass player."
So you moved in right away to the Gypsy House that day?
So that particular day, yeah. I moved in, and Donnie Forte was my roommate.
What was the house like?
It was a large living area with multi-level bedrooms. There was I think it was like three-story. It's a very large house. Timmy and his girlfriend and Don and I, Bill Lorden and Rico and his girlfriend all lived there, and we rehearsed there.
They had all the equipment set up in the living room?
Yes.
So at that point, Rico's girlfriend was Toots, correct?
Tootsie.
And
yeah.
This was after the Los Feliz house they lived in?
Are you talking the one about the Sharon Tate murders?
The La Biancas lived behind the house in Los Feliz?
Yeah, that was before
okay.
The Laurel Canyon house.
That was before. All right. So it's Enrico and his girlfriend Tootsie, Bill Lorden, Tim McCarthy, Don Forte. How about Kenny?
I don't remember Kenny living there.
Okay. I'm not sure.
But he was definitely one of the guys on the road crew.
Okay. And now, had they finished In the Garden at this point, or were they still working on the parts of the album?
They were doing the overdubs. The basic tracks had already been cut.
Okay.
And they were just doing vocals and maybe guitar solos over the basic tracks.
Okay. What kind of bass guitar and amp did you bring along to Gypsy here?
Oh, I had a Fender precision bass and a custom amplifier.
What year was the bass?
1964 precision that I had paid $100 at the pawn shop in Wichita Falls, Texas.
So you started rehearsing the songs. Now, by this time, you had heard the songs off the first album, I assume, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you knew Gypsy Queen and Dead and Gone and all those songs?
Oh, yeah, I had to learn them all.
Right. So that's what you spent your time doing while they were doing their vocal overdubs?
I spent most of my time learning those tunes, and I did get to go and into the down to the studio with Jim Johnson a few times to hear what the In the Garden album was like.
I can't remember if that was Devonshire or that was Larrabee.
That was Larrabee.
That was Larrabee, okay.
Devonshire was their
first one.
First album studio, right. And then Larrabee was the second.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall the first job you played live with Gypsy?
I'm not sure what the town was, but it was south of Los Angeles, and it was with Poco and another band, but yeah, that was my first job with them.
Anything stick out in your mind regarding your first job with Gypsy?
No, not really, just another gig. Mm-hmm.
Now, at this time, they were playing pretty frequently at the Whiskey A Go-Go, right?
Well, they had already been the house band at the Whiskey, and I did a couple of dates with them after they had were no longer the house band, that they had got their record deal.
Were they playing frequently or not?
It had slowed down a bit because they were getting ready to go from just the L.A. local band to a national touring band. They were getting their agencies, booking agencies, offers, and it was just, you know, in the infant stage of them becoming a touring band. When they had that house gig, that was when the first album had been released,
right,
before I had ever come into the picture.
So they finish up their second album, and then they start writing songs for the third album with RCA, Antithesis, correct?
Well, that happened once when I got in the band, and after the In the Garden had been released, that's when we started doing touring dates. And we did dates with Tower of Power and also with Poco, and of course the Guess Who. We did a large number of dates with them over a longer period of time.
Then they start work on their RCA album, and you had a role in one of the songs, correct?
Well, most of those tunes were written once we had been hired by the Guess Who's manager, Don Hunter, and had moved back to Minneapolis because the management company was going to do a tour all across Canada with the Guess Who. And they felt that it would be, since they were footing the bill for the existence of the band at that time, they figured it would be better off for the band to move back to their home state of Minnesota. And it's closer to Winnipeg, where we would meet up with the Guess Who to go on the tours. So most of those songs from the Antithesis album were written during practice sessions in Minneapolis.
And one of those songs was Day After Day, co-written by you and James Walsh, correct?
Well, I had written the music part and was needing help with the vocals, and had already a idea of what I wanted the song to be about. And James helped me with the words. So I wrote the music and he helped with the lyrics.
So you got to see firsthand the chemistry between Rico, Jim Johnson, and James Walsh as far as their harmonies. How would you describe the chemistry between those three in regards to their background vocals?
Well, they were all equally good singers, and when they sang together, the harmony was just incredible. They sang very well together, and it was something that I hadn't heard in other bands that much at that time, and I was pretty well excited to be a part of what they had been doing for years.
Now, you told me prior to this phone call that you weren't exactly happy playing the standard blues songs in Fort Worth. Is that right?
Well, Texas is a more rock, blues, country state. And I'd always enjoyed Motown stuff, the Stax record stuff. And that's one of the reasons why I left. I was looking to play more than three chord changes, the music of Motown just was I love listening to it and playing it.
Okay, just to clarify now, so you did you move back to Minneapolis prior to recording the first album for RCA or after recording the album for RCA?
The move back to Minneapolis was before we did Antithesis, which was the third album.
Okay, and where did everybody live in Minneapolis?
Well, they all had their families, and Jim had his individual home, and of course Bill did, and Rico and Tootsie, his mother lived in St. Paul, but he didn't want to live with his near his mother. So he found a townhome out on Lake Minnetonka. I can't think of the town out there. Mound, yeah. Yeah, Rico found a place, and of course I was staying with Bill at the time, and so he came by and picked me up, and we went out and looked at it, and it was a two-bedroom townhome right there on the lake, and we could afford the monthly rent, so I was Rico and Tootsie's roommate for all maybe 6 months or so.
How'd that work out?
Well, it worked out fine because their bedroom was on the totally other end of the house, so I didn't mind it at all.